Do you, Nico, have a foil story where something happened, an accident happened, and now you do something differently?
Yeah, there's many.
This is Up on Foil, the podcast for everyone flying just above the surface. Pump, carb, soar, let's foil!
Welcome to episode number 54 of Up and Foil, the podcast where we talk all about foiling. And today it is with Nico Hopp, the guy behind Hoppline. And let me introduce us real quick. I'm Matt. I'm an average foiler here in Engadine at the moment, doing a Parawing review part two. I have like 8 different brands. Super exciting today. Doesn't look like a lot of wind, but Michael pumping. And with me is Nico Hopp. He's a foil inspirator. He's kind of like me, but better. He does content. He's a super good foiler compared to me, and I'm super excited to talk about foiling and also about content creation, because you're not only very good, like the quality is super high, but also very creative, and maybe I can learn something from you. Nico, is there anything you want to add right away?
Yeah, I want to just jump in and say I'm not better than you are. I've watched so many of your videos, and I think it's not being better or not, it's just different. And I think we're very similar on a lot of levels. Like, we are more or less within reach of the average foiler if you look at the pros, and I think this is good for the two of us. Pros are up here and we're here, and maybe an average is very close to what we're doing, but there's not much of a gap in between. And so they look what we're doing, and it's within their reach, and that's very interesting.
I think so too. And I also think it's super important for people to actually see people struggling as well. And I was super happy. I don't know if you've seen the video where Gwen tested the foil scoot and he failed at the beginning. I thought that was so good, because he's amazing. But he showing us that also he struggles sometimes, I think that's super important. And I think that's not shown enough from the pros.
Yeah, and I think that's very important. There was a little bit of a discussion on one of Dave West's videos where he put up like a failing thing with a Parawing when he got into it.
Classic.
And there were so many comments, hey, you're a pro, you should not post fails, and that's not good for the sport of Parawing. But that's reality. I put up a Parawing video, the first one I put up, and it was all being tangled in the lines. And that's the reality. If you go out for the first time, especially if you haven't practiced on a skateboard or something, it's not going to be up and riding in 5 minutes. It's just a different story. And I think it's just what you said. It's very important for us to share the fails as well. I just uploaded a video yesterday of me trying to ollie on a pump foil. And it was just fails. There's not a single one I could stand. And I was actually asking people for giving me advice. So I'm not up there a pro or something. I'm right here with the people, with the community, interchanging and asking them for help.
But still a very high level, and I want to discuss that later on. But first, maybe for the listeners who don't know you that well, you can just go again. You started as a surfer when you were younger, right? How did that start, and how did the switch come to foiling?
I'm not sure why, but I always wanted to surf like my whole life. And I've been begging my parents to take me out surfing, but living in the middle of Germany, it never really happened. It's not like you're going into your backyard, you're not living in Maui. I had to wait until I got my driver's license. And then me and a friend, we watched the movie Endless Summer Part 2, where they bought like an old deja vu. We bought the same car and then drove to the beach down to France and just got hammered by the barrels. It was like smashing a shore break, and I was like, yeah, I could do that. I was skateboarding, longboarding, so I had the board feel, but I had no clue about waves. And if you've prone foiled surf before, 99% is just paddling and wave prediction down the line, and we were just getting hammered all the time. But I within probably 4 weeks I had my first clean wave, and I kind of felt like a really deep connection to the ocean and to surfing. And ever since then, I've been surfing. And then foiling came along. And that was, for me, living in Germany, that was becoming a local for the first time, like taking rivers, lakes for pump foiling, power wing, everything, wing foiling. And I instantly knew this is going to be great. And I jumped on a board, I tried it. It was one of these very fast kite foils at the beginning. There were no pump foils at all. But I was behind a wakeboard. I instantly knew, wow, this is the future. And this is taking very long. But at the same time, I realized this could be, I always wanted to work with surfing or foiling then. And I studied industrial designer. I worked as an industrial designer. I was running a boat license teaching facility as a CEO for some time, but I always wanted to dedicate my work to surfing. And then when foiling came along, I was like, well, this is probably my last chance to jump on this train and to make my hobby, my passion, my business, my daily work. So yeah, I jumped on it, made some videos, and it's been a hard journey, to be honest.
Yeah, we're gonna get all into that. But when you first foiled yourself, was that on a kite foil, like kiting, or start with pumping?
No, it was like wake foiling behind the boat. We were towing in, but it was like a tiny, very narrow, fast, not made for wake foiling kind of foil. I got up, I was just shooting out, but I could instantly feel, I was like, yeah, this is not the right foil and this is not the right gear. We're going way too fast. But I just went online and see what I could get my hands on, which was a Slingshot Infinity 84, like a massive big foil. And then I was learning again. I went to a dock, I jumped off the dock and instantly knew, well, this is not going to happen instantly. And then I put some time and effort into it. And I think you said I'm a good foiler. I think I'm a good average foiler, but because I have this surfing background, I have a lot of feeling and maybe comparison to different situations for judging gear. And then my industrial design background comes in as well. So I think that's kind of the niche I went for, trying to make a little bit of a higher quality content with a lot of technical details.
Yeah, and we can really see that, like the lighting, the sound, your microphone. Well, yeah, it's really very good.
It's, it's
really
nice to watch. Thanks. Really, yeah, good. I wish I could even become better, but it's struggling everywhere. If you make a high quality Hollywood production, it's just money. It's different cameras. It's more expensive gear. I wish there was more money in the foiling industry so I could actually grow the channel, not only in numbers, but also in quality, like having even more gear.
let's just get into that. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about your content that you produce. As I said, very high quality. I see in the background you have a rack for your foils, for everything. Is that your main job, like doing these films, these videos, or what brings money? How do you Nothing. Get food on the table?
There's you have a no, family, right? No money. I have a family. Yeah, you got three kids. So yeah, like we said, we're on a very similar page, but I think you're still a teacher, if I remember
yes,
right.
Yes, yes.
So there's a lot of teachers. It's funny, like Dom from Foil Drive, he used to be a teacher, and a lot of my friends, I think teachers have a lot of free time.
That's true.
It's actually the day I started doing Hoplying. I actually reserved all the YouTube and Instagram names long time ago, I think like 10, 15 years ago, because it's like Hopline and it's like Hotline. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I just, one day I'm going to do something with this. So I got like the domain and everything. And usually you would sit down and write a business plan and go like, where's the money coming from? Should I focus on this and this affiliate marketing and stuff like that? I've never made a business plan, and I was just like, I made a passion plan. I was like, I'm writing down scripts for funny reels and things I want to talk about and things I want to get into. And I'm only getting 5% of what's on my mind and on my brain out to the public. And I wish it would be more, but I never really thought about the business side. And I was doing it for almost a year. And then my wife said, well, at some point we need to make some money. And I was like, yeah, you're right. So I still had side projects. So I was working full time on Hopline, but I was doing some small side projects, making social marketing, social media for some other companies. And then these companies, not surf and foil related, became surf and foil related, like Foil Drive. So I would go out on events, not as Hopline, but as Nico, working for Foil Drive. And this is what I'm doing at the moment. I'm trying to not be paid by any of the major brands. I'm working together with a lot of brands, but I want to be as independent as possible. And I've got some offers, and I do get offers to make reviews for money, but that's just something that doesn't work for me. So it's really hard, and we're struggling hard to make this happen, and I'm not sure if I can make it work, but it's getting better and better. It just takes time.
How, as you said, you work with Foil Drive, and there I've seen you at the boat in Düsseldorf. You're actually there getting paid by, I don't know, very nice, by the hour, by the day, whatever. But then with this other stuff, the reviews you do, you said you want to be independent, be as unbiased as possible, but still, yeah, you need to get some money in. Like, can you recommend gear and then get paid, or how does that work?
You could if you wanted to. At the beginning, I thought if you're on YouTube and they've got this monetization program, and if you're just making videos, just by the views, you're getting money. But it's like there's a barrier. You have to have like 4,000 hours of watch time and 1,000 followers. And it took roughly, I think it was 9 months before I reached that. And then I went into this monetization. I was like, oh, from now on, I can do independent stuff getting paid by YouTube. And then the first paycheck came, and I think it was like, you need to have like a certain amount. I think in Europe it's 70 euros, and then they start paying you. And that took 3 months just to get 70 euros. So I could take my wife out for dinner once without the kids. So if you wanted to, and you're making good reviews, and you're having a little bit of a name and some followers, it doesn't take much, because foiling is such a niche. Companies do pay you or offer me money to make reviews. So we've got in Germany, we've got Uwe from Gleiten TV. He's pretty famous, and that's his business model. He's taking money. He's still making independent reviews, and not all of them are good. But for me, it just doesn't work, because if you're reviewing a foil, you're making a nice review and getting paid for it, and then it's a shitty foil, what are you going to say? You're going to say, oh yeah, it's still good, and you don't need high quality. Sometimes the worst is the best. It just doesn't work. So that would be the easiest way to make an income. But I'd rather work on side projects, like with Foil Drive. This is not Hopline. This is me, Nico, and because they know I use the system and I love the system, it's for me, it's not bending or something, and it's like a win-win situation. I wish there was a way to be 100% Hopline all the time, every day, and getting paid in some way. But like I said, I never really put a lot of effort into the business plan.
Are you going to change that in the future? Like thinking about how you actually can earn money? Because as you said, it's hard.
I've recently thought about affiliate marketing, because if I review a foil I like, if people after watching my review click on the link, and then I'm getting 5% commission or something, that would work for me, and I hope it works for all my followers. But there's always benefits. It would be a nice benefit for me, but at the same time, you're then, if you have a brand X and you're channeling traffic, like shop traffic, to the brand directly, you're kind of going down the business to client route, and we're still having business to business on shops. So you're taking away sales from the shops and transferring them directly to the brands, which might lead to surf shops dying in the future, which is sad too. So whatever you do, it's taking money from the brands, you're getting biased in a certain way. If you're working on affiliate links, it's the same. I'm not really sure how and where and why I need money, but how I will make a living from Hopline. Like next week there's a SFT pump foil event in Traunsee, Austria, and I'm just going to work for them doing social media. So again, that's not Hopline, that's me, Nico, just working, making money to feed my family and get some food on the table.
All right, that makes a lot of sense. But still, if you get the gear from brands, are you going to tell them ahead that you're going to be super honest and maybe say that it's a shitty foil?
Yeah, I would. Like if you watch my videos, pretty much at every beginning, I tell if I got this for free, if it's a rental, or if I can keep it. Like most of the time I can't, I have to send it back. And in these situations, it's mainly me approaching the companies. So for example, when the Powerwings came out, I reached out to a few companies and asked them, hey, can I borrow a Powerwing and maybe make a review? And I'm not going to promise anything. I'm not going to say it's a good one. I just want to get into it. And I'm absolutely in love with Powerwing. I think you too. It's
yeah, definitely.
Absolutely crazy. You've tested it way more than I did. But I've only tested a few, and it's just like you said on your last, I think it was the Foil Life podcast, you were talking about all the different brands. Each and every one is different, and it's fun to find out which one is the best for you, and that's a personal preference again.
We're going to talk about Powerwings in just a second. Behind you, I see Subfoil, I see Indiana Wings, I see Enzis. Is the one on the top, is that a slingshot?
That's a slingshot, yeah.
What other brands do you have? And do you actually, because if I get stuff to test, I'm actually glad when I can send it back because it's so much money. And I think I would have to increase my insurance just having these things.
I think it's I'm working with a lot of brands, to be honest. And it's... I get the gear most of the time. I have to send it back. Sometimes I can keep it, which is not very often. But like you said, it's a high value. And at the moment, this is probably like six figures in euros, just surfing gear. So what you see right here is just the stuff I'm using on a daily base. But there's probably like 30, 40 foils around me, and there's more coming pretty much every day. I've got a lot of boards, wings, and because I'm doing power winging, wing foiling, pump foiling, downwind, sub foiling, prone foiling, it just adds up, and it's a lot of gear and a lot of money. I might get insurance myself. Never thought about the insurance, but that's the business person again, which is missing right here. Should be sitting another one right here.
Well, if you never had any problems, then you probably don't need it. But also, if you have that much gear, and I see it with that Powerwing comparison, now I have 8 or 9 different Powerwings. I need a lot of time to actually test these, because I want at least 2 hours with every Powerwing, with each Powerwing on the water to really feel it. Usually, after 10 minutes, you know what it's about, but still sometimes after a while, something else becomes clear. So you need a lot of time on the water as well. How do you manage that?
I'm pretty much on the water every day and I'm taking my time. I think this is super important. And I think this is what sets you and me maybe apart from a few other surfluencers. A lot of people, if they get on a foil, on a power wing, on a wing, and within 10 minutes, you have a rough idea, but sometimes it takes a lot longer. I've had some foils, like there's one from, I think it's the Barracuda, the small one, and it took me ages to get it started. I think it was the S or the M, a dock start. It just took forever. But once I was on the foil, I was like, wow, it's going to take me another hour to just do one dock start, but I need to do something because it's an amazing foil. So it takes a very long time to really get to know foils and wings, and I do take time. Usually, I'd say I spend at least almost 20 sessions with one foil before I'm making a first judgment. And sometimes I have foils for 2-3 months and I ride them pretty much every day. And every time I go to the beach, I take at least 5 or 6 foils. And then people always say, wow, you've been out doing sports, you've been wing foiling the whole day. But you know, it's not wing foiling. You're not going out and having fun. You're going out and then you're going back, swapping tails, swapping front wings, swapping again. And then swapping constantly. I was out on a session the other day and a guy approached me and he's like, wow, did you have problems? And I was like, no. And he said, I saw you going back to the shore like every 10 minutes for the last 3 hours. And I was like, yeah, I'm just comparing. And I was just comparing the glide series and the flow series from Slingshot. And that's just 5 or 6 front wings I had. But I really wanted to know every combination, and not just on that day. I've did it like 10 sessions and I took them on the vacation. So for me, it's really hard, because this also means that if you're buying a foil yourself, one you want to review, and you're spending money, and then it takes you a month to make a nice review, not because it takes so long to do all the filming, but it takes so long to really understand the foil, the benefits, and where it shines and where it doesn't. Other people just go out one session and then they make a review 1 month before you did one. So a lot of times when I upload my reviews, it's already outdated because the industry is pushing so hard and is so quick. So that's a problem for me.
Yeah, the more gear you get, the more problems like these arise. But then again, you have a lot of time on the water. How does that, like, how much problem do you have with maybe also the wife, the kids, that you need time on the water for your work? It looks fun from the outside. It usually is fun as well. It's work, but it's fun. Sometimes that's it hard. Sucks too. But how do you manage that, or how do you approach this difficulty?
It's, first of all, it's all year round. And like you're living in Switzerland and it's cold, or it's getting cold, and it's the same in Germany. Like I go in the water sometimes at -4 degrees when it's snowing, and I still try to go out pretty much every day. It's my wife, she knows it's my job. She wish it would get more money from it, and we might one day, hopefully. But she's getting my back on this one, and she knows it's my passion and my dream to make Hopline my living for the next couple of years. But it's hard, and I think it's all about convenience and being organized. So it's not like having a session with friends where you're just chit-chatting on the beach and you're like having a drink afterwards. It's more like a job. So I'm living very close to my little river here, from sitting at the laptop to being in the water and riding. It's less than 10 minutes. And a lot of times I'm sitting somewhere and I'm doing some reviews or writing a script, and I was like, oh man, I can't remember really. Was the one stabilizer better than the other, or how do they compare? So I just grab my gear, I just head down, because I do have the convenience of using a foil drive. So I'm not relying on wind and waves. I can just use that tool to compare things, and that works quite well. But every time we're having wind, if it's on the weekends and we plan something with the kids and we don't get much wind, I kind of have to go, because it's only like 70, 80 good wind days here. And my wife's already complaining. She's setting, like the wind and I were having a deal. It's always on the weekends, but it's not that I want to go. I love my kids. I love spending time with the family and my kids, but wind is wind. And then I kind of do have to go.
Yeah, it's really hard. If there's wind, you really need to go. How well organized are you? Because it was the day before yesterday, I was out maybe 8 hours on the parawing. I still feel it everywhere. Yeah. And then I wanted to track the pairings for upwind comparability. And I have so many tracks on my watch now, and I find it hard to remember which one was which. So I'm probably not going to use that upwind comparability, just from how I felt it was, that I can remember, but I don't remember which track was which. So I should have stopped and maybe notes. Are you well organized?
Kind of. Yeah, I'm not, like so many times I'm coming back from a session and it's just like you said, you're tracking something, you've got all these gear and all these data, but you don't know really which was which. But if I'm going out and I know I'm comparing, I'm actually taking notes. So I know I'm making the first two runs on the clock. You could go into the app and just name it and rename it and say that was stabilizer XY, but that's taking a lot of time. So I'm just taking notes, saying the first two is this one, and then that's the next one, and then you kind of know which is which. But it's hard, and it's hard work, and this is what people sometimes don't understand. They see you out on the beach, and we do have a small beach here right on the river, and they say, wow, you've got the best job in the world, you're out having fun every day. Yeah, it is fun, but just like you said, it's work at the same time, and sometimes it's very hard work, especially when it's cold and rainy.
I've talked to Dave and also to Dominic from Foil Drive, and we know they curse as well. Are you someone are you a curser, or you're just taking it easy and saying, well, that's just what it is?
I wasn't before powering. I've been this like this all my life. I've got I think I've got the constant feeling of missing out. It's like the fear, FOMO, fear of missing out. Like every day I sit here, I know there's pounding waves somewhere. And back in the day when I was really active into surfing, I was living in Australia for a few years and I was surfing every day. And every day I would not be on the beach and I was doing two sessions a day. I would be sitting, studying or something, working, and I would be, oh my God, there's waves somewhere. So getting older, that's getting a little bit better, but I'm still getting super frustrated if things don't work. And this is not only being in the water trying a trick and it just doesn't work, but getting stuck somewhere and knowing I could surf, like getting stuck in traffic. And I do get a lot of nightmares, and this is a very common nightmare for me, where I approach a beach and I just walk and my board falls apart and I'm not getting in the water because it just falls apart, or I'm hitting the water and I lost my fins, or the power wing broke or something. So this is really, and this can get really hard on me, like being on a wedding, for example, and then I see the forecast and it's perfect forecast. And then all these WhatsApp and SMS comes in from your friends, pictures, yeah. And it's like, whoa, this epic day, look at that, swell's building up. And this is where I get really frustrated. And the same with tricks and powering. Like if you've been out powering in perfect conditions, maybe overpower, it can go from best session in your life to worst session in your life within a second. It's like you're out, you're shredding, you're like, wow, this is so good. This is like the best I ever had. And the next second, it's like all wrapped up in your foil. You're somehow ended up in the shore break or something. You're just getting powdered and washed. And you're like, okay, it's the worst. Just went from the best to the worst.
Can you maybe tell us one or two of your worst stories? Doesn't need to be parawing. Can be anything foil related.
I think it's not foil. Like the worst I probably ever had was surf related. I almost grounded in Australia. And I think I almost passed out. I got washed under rocks and sucked into like a cave system. And that was like a really scary jump into the wave. That was actually in the morning. We had Kelly Slater. He was just flying in. It was I think Bell's Beach down in Melbourne, and it was further up the coast. And he was doing some amazing barrels, and I tried to jump off like a 4 meter cliff, and there was the barrels pounding against, and you had to jump on the back of the wave and then slide down and do a duck dive constantly. And I did this for like 10 minutes and I was like, oh yeah, I'm still good, but I was not getting away from the rocks. And I looked back, and just looking back was too much time not paddling. So I got sucked into a cave system, washed under the rock, and then probably 60, 70 meters later, I got spit out on the other side. And I was constantly hitting the rocks with my head. And I thought, that's it. And you're trying to hold your breath for as long as you can. And then at some point, you're just, breathing water. But it was a very nice, but it was a good experience because it's kind of hard. But it starts off with a little bit of fear, and then it becomes a little, it tends to go towards panic. But because you've been in situations like this before, you're not really panicking. And then at some point, all the fear just goes away. And I was just perfectly focused. I was like touching the rocks, trying if I could go somewhere. And I was, even the lungs filled with salt water, it was burning afterwards super hard. But at that moment, I was not in fear and I was just totally focused. And so at least I know for now that grounding is not the worst, because your body is reacting to the situation. It's just taking away all the fear. So that was a pretty rough experience. And I had another one which was very similar. And I think situations like this happen to everyone. And it's just part of the game. And it's just important to not jump levels too fast, to just go step by step and always go within your limits and your abilities.
I think that's where foil drive actually could be a problem, because you can go somewhere where you shouldn't be right now. But we're going to talk about that later. I just want to like also do a little shout out to everyone listening, because I was trying to get some stories, foil stories, where stuff happened that shouldn't have happened, maybe some accidents or something, and how you could prevent that. So if any of you who's listening or watching has a story, but I don't want a story from someone that you heard about. I want a firsthand story of something that happened and how you actually, or what you do now that doesn't happen again. If you have a story like that, please hit me up on Instagram. or maybe in the comments on YouTube as well. Do you, Nico, have a foil story where something happened, an accident happened, and now you do something differently?
Yeah, there's many. Like, I've had a few wing foil sessions and had the wing explode or crash or getting like a hole, and I lost the wing and I had to do a very long paddle. If you're familiar with the ocean and you know you're not going against the current but go with the flow, it's scary, but it's not going to kill you. It's just taking some time, and it, like I said, it is scary. I changed the closing the valve when I had like a one pump inflation system. I always had the valve open, which would inflate the leading edge and the strut at the same time, and I would never close the valve between. And then at some day at the ocean, I think it was on the Canarian Islands, I was very far out and I was a little bit scared, and all of a sudden the wing just exploded and I lost the air in the center strut as well. If I would have closed the valve, it would have been something to hold on, but I still, at that time, I had a fairly big wing foil board, so I could pedal back on the board. That was nice. But since then, I always close the valve, and these days, most of the wings have like two valves and different pressures in the system. That's something I changed. I'm always really take care of my leashes. I've lost so many boards in the surf, and if you're out very far, paddling back to the beach without a board can be really taking a long time and scary as well. So I'm kind of replacing leashes when they get too old. That's, I think, very important, going without
a
leash.
How much is too old? How old is too old?
I think it depends on the wear. If you see like little cracks, if the plastic is getting like cracked by the UV light and just getting too old, and the little string connecting the leash to the board, that's a very important part. I think that's the one breaking the most. At the same time, on ankle leashes, the connection from the coil, from the string towards the ankle leash, that's where it usually breaks. So if you bend this and it kind of feels, yeah, stiff because it's losing the chemicals that keep it soft, if you see some minor cracks or something, just replace it, because that's your safety issue. Very important on the leashes you do actually have on the Velcro, there's a little strap which you can pull, and this is on every leash. It's kind of like a quick release. And be aware of this. There was an incident in Germany just a couple of months ago on a river wave, and a young lady died because she got stuck underwater. And the same happened to me, but I was crawling up the rocks and I was aware of the how to detach the leash from my ankle. And they force people on the river wave to use leashes that actually break. So it's going to keep your board in reach, but if you put a lot of pressure on it, it's going to break. So it's always good to know your gear and stay within your abilities at the first place, but then know your gear if something goes wrong, and things do get wrong, unfortunately.
Yeah, even if you're good, something can always happen. I see that if we read some accidents in the mountains, for example, it's always the experienced mountaineers where something happens. So it's just, it can be bad luck. But what leash do you recommend? And you probably must have tried different leashes as well.
Oh, there's so many. I'm actually using different leashes for different purposes. On the power wing, I think that's a very big discussion if people use wings, like a leash, a hand leash or something on the power wing. I don't like leashes on the power wing. I just go without. Mainly using like a leash around my waist on wing foiling, because it keeps my feet free. On sup, I use like an ankle leash, a little bit higher one. So I have so many, and I'm using different ones on different sports.
All right. I had a wing leash. The first ones I had, the Velcro was just going around, and one actually went open and the wing flew away. So now I'm using kind of leash where you go around, it's a little plastic. So if it opens up, it's still a little bit somewhere around, you can grab it.
Yeah, that's
somehow
a good one. Yeah.
But there's so many, usually I don't so many use safety a board features. Leash anymore. Yeah, but I don't usually use a board leash anymore, especially with the para wing, because it can get tangled. And honestly, I'm not para winging in the waves at the moment. If there were big waves, I would use a board leash. But with the para wings, I don't use one. I have never seen one actually drowning. So
I was out the other day on a power wing, and I was out with a pocket rocket. It was pretty windy. I think I was on a 3.2 and on a starboard Ace Lightning, and I think I had like a very long mast, and I crashed, and the board just caught the wind, and it was still on foil, and it was kind of like going away from me. And because I'm on a river with a current, I was floating in the opposite direction. So the board was going upwind, and I was going against the wind. And I was like, oh, how long is that going to last? Like 2-3 seconds, and then it's going to go down. But it just kept going and going because the board, it was like on an angle, and it caught the wind, and it was just the wind put it like back upright, and then it was just gaining speed, and it was even catching some tiny swell. I was like, oh my God. And within just a couple of seconds, probably, it was like more than 60, 70 meters away. And I still had the power wing. And so I thought about ditching the power wing, but I was like, nah, I have to send it back to Ozone. So I kind of like very quick stowed it away, and then I went for a very long swim. I think it was more than 20 minutes constantly swimming. Oh, and then wow. It was slowly like going back to me, and that was it's more about losing gear, because the river is only 300 meters wide. I could always swim back and be safe, but I would have lost the board and the foil. So it's more about losing gear, losing money, than losing your life. But okay. Still having a leash.
Still, still important. Still important. All right. Well, that sounds terrible, especially if you have the pairwing in the water. Then it's just an anchor, and you just cannot swim with that in your hand.
So many times I was in going without the leash on the power wing in the beginning. I was in between grabbing the board and grabbing the power wing, and some of them don't float. Like I think that, as far as I know, if you sit them in the water for a long period of time, they kind of go down. Like some handles
with the waves,
float.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, they do. And they're not really sinking, but they are just submerged under the water surface. And the first time I was out powering, I just dropped the pocket rocket, and I was just taking my harness and taking my time. And then I looked to the side, and it was just like half a meter underwater. And I was like, oh my God. Because if you're not used to it, and you're wing foiling all the time, it's like constantly, you can put your wing wherever you want to. It's always going to be on the water surface.
That's true. So you just talked about the pocket rocket. What other pair of wings have you used? I'm just curious.
I've used the, very shortly, the Pole and the Frigate. And the Ala DW from Subfoil.
Yeah.
I also had the new one from BRM.
Oh yeah, the double skin.
No, not the double skin, the one before.
The Kanaha,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the D-Wing, I used the D-Wing. And on land, I think I tried the Norse, and that's pretty much it.
All right. Because I've just tried the Paia 2 days ago. And I couldn't get it up. It's really a different technique. Yeah, it was. I think the wind would have been strong enough, because I was way overpowered with the 5 meter. With the harness, it kind of worked. And the 4 meters were going well. 3.8 was going super well. They have a 5.3 Paia, and I couldn't get it going.
What kind of harness do you use?
I just have a stash belt, I think, from Elements that I used. I have a life jacket with a hook as well. Sometimes I use that. But if I go now testing, I usually have 3 power wings with me, one in the pouch, one flying, and one in the backpack, so I can change on the water, so I don't lose too much time. And there, I couldn't go without a harness. My arms were toast already anyway, because with the 5 meter pow and stronger winds,
oh my God,
it was heavy, man. But it was fun. It was fun.
I can imagine.
Really cool.
It still is, and I'm just getting into the harness, and I've tried different ones. And recently I had like a chest harness, which is more like a backpack, and then it comes together right here. And that was really fun, because it was so easy just to get in and out, and you don't have to look down. It was more in the right place, and especially if you're paddling out somewhere, it's not in the way, and you don't have to move the hook to the side. So that was pretty nice.
All right, that's interesting. Have you seen that? Because people are changing it up now. They have like this little kind of harness lines on their pouch, and they're just hooking into the front of the bar.
Yeah, I saw that.
Have you done that as well?
No, I haven't. I want to try it. there's so many ways to, it's all like, this is the magic of powering. There's every day you look on the internet and Instagram, it's like I'm on some of the developer WhatsApp groups, and it's like every day things coming up, people experimenting, like you said in your last podcast, shortening lines. Like, I don't have the time to, I'm reviewing a powering as it is, but you could spend so much more time shortening the lines, playing around with it. But I'm leaving this to the brands, and I'm just doing the reviews. But it's tweaking things, like, and foiling, shimming, stuff like that. There's endless possibilities everywhere.
Have you gone into shimming?
A little bit, yeah, not too much.
Because I've talked to Hilti, I don't know if you've heard about him. He rounded Lake Toon and Lake Brienz with his
pump foil, yeah.
And he said, -1 degree shim changed everything for him.
It does. But I'm doing like the basic things if I do reviews. I don't shim much for reviews. But on my personal use, if I do have a foil I like a lot, I'm trying different fuselage, different lengths, and different stabilizers. I even interchange in between companies sometimes. If I think this is not the perfect stabilizer, I'm trying to make another one from another brand work on this one. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But then I actually do go into the effort of shimming. And usually I go 1, 2, or 0.5 up and down and just do a couple of runs and see if I do get any benefits. And sometimes it's up to the conditions. They do get faster having less drag with depends on the system. So it makes sense. It does work.
All right.
But it's a lot of effort.
Maybe you have to get in there as well.
It's even more testing, and it takes like, if you're testing 4 or 5 different stabilizers, it's a lot of effort to test every stabilizer with every front wing. And at the same time, we do now have a lot of systems where you can't shim anymore. Like if you have a monoblock system, a fixed tail like you have at the Slingshot one lock system right now, you can't shim anymore. So they're trying to dial it in and get it as good as possible right from the beginning.
All right. Before we get into the next segment, and I want to talk about your videos, about how you are so creative and what goes through your mind when you plan a video, I want to do, and I got that from Freddie and Liam from the Generic Foiling Podcast.
Oh, they are. I'm a little bit jealous about that one, because they are fantastic. It's like, it's probably
so
my favorite podcast. They are so cool. And
it is funny, really amazing.
The funny thing is, I sometimes don't want to have a face on my mind for people on a podcast. If I'm only listening to podcasts, they are in my head, they're different. And now I've actually seen the Generic Podcast guys, Liam, I think for the first time on your podcast, and I saw them. And now they're a lot younger than I thought they would be.
Yeah, so funny. Me too.
I was like, oh my god. So that was very. Yeah. Very funny.
It was really cool. I was a bit scared at first because they're so cool. But it was really a fun chat. If you haven't seen or listened to that, go back. I'm going to put the link somewhere. Or just go on uponfoil.com. You find older episodes. So I want to do the want of the week with you. Can be the want of 2 weeks. Doesn't matter. Like, is there anything that you think, I want that. I want to try that. I want to use that. I want to have it. Do you have anything?
Yeah, there's one thing coming today, but I'm not allowed to talk about it. it's probably while we're talking, the doorbell's going to ring and the postman's going to hand my wife a very nice big package. So it's, if you're getting a lot of new gear, and sometimes it's pre-release pretty much on an average daily base, it kind of fades away. Like it's still new and it's still new gear, but at the same time, for me, it's work related. Like getting a new foil is not only, wow, I've got a new foil and I'm gonna shred and I'm gonna have so much fun out. At the same time, it's okay, let's sit down, make a schedule. What do I need? Do I need this shot? So it's always work related. And I'm actually very much looking forward to spending time with other people. So we do have a very good pump community here. And I think this is my personal highlight, especially in pump foiling. If you're out winging, you're more or less by yourself, but pump foiling and dock starting has a very social aspect as well. You're having a chat, you're laughing about other people failing, and then you're pushing yourself. Like just the other day, and that's probably the best we had and I had in the last week, we went out on just a random letter start, doc start session, and it was a very high ponton. And I was looking at it for a very long time to jump off and do like a jump start. It's probably like a meter high, and I'm just getting into it. And I was like, I'm just gonna try it now. And then we all tried it, and it became like a battle in a positive way. And I was not the first one to land and pump away. It was a friend of mine, and he never thought about it. But it's just stored energy, and I never really thought about it. If you're jumping down and you're struggling to start from a ladder because you can't get the speed into the foil, if you're jumping from a meter, you're gaining so much energy, and it's just about the landing and control. But if you somehow by accident manage this, you can get away with pretty small foils. Yeah. So that was probably my highlight of the last week.
All right, very nice. And the foil that you cannot talk about, I really want a day with wind, like the one I had two days ago when I tried that Bahia, because that's really the thing. It needs more wind than just a single skin. And I have a 5.3 compared to the 4 meter single skin I have. That should be actually good if the 4 meter is well powered, then the Paya should work as well. So hopefully tomorrow or the day after it should work. Here we're very high up. We're at 1,800 meters above sea level. So the air is thinner and you even need more wind than that. Let's hope.
I never thought about that, but it does make a difference. And it's probably the same like salt and sweet water. If you're in a foil, I can definitely tell the difference.
Really? Because it's funny. I did that test almost a year ago, the freshwater salt water thing, and I still have trouble understanding because, yes, it is a little bit denser, and it's really a little, it's like 3% or something, but it should also like break more.
Yeah,
it's not only more lift that you have, but it should also break more. So doesn't that
thicken
itself out?
I'm not really sure. I'm not getting into the physics. I thought about it, but I never really got into it. But from my experience, and I took exactly the same setup, and I was super surprised in salt water, and I've managed to do a lot of things, and then I came back here and I tried it in sweet water, and it just didn't work. My first beach start was coming back from a prone foil session, and it was in Thailand, and I was doing a nice prone foil session, walking back, crossing a small river, going into another river, and it was just a perfect drop. And I was not trying to beach start, I was just lazy pushing the foil and putting my hand on it and having it just float in this little 20 centimeters of river water. And then that was still pushing salt water, pushing up. There was so much lift, and I was thinking about like, wow, walking on the beach back in sweet water, there's not that much lift. And that's where I actually landed my first beach start. And I think that's because it just works. I can feel the difference. It's not much like you said, but I think there is a difference. Density in air is something I've never thought about, but being 1,800 meters high, it might make a difference.
Yeah, I think it really does. And please, people who are listening or watching, please go down in the comments and explain to us what you know or what you think you know, because there are a lot of people who think they know and they want to still share. So please do. Let's have a discussion.
So if we're taking bulbs from all these crazy lakes up in the mountain and put them on salt water on sea level, he's shredding even more.
it's so fun because I was here with Buzz, and that's what you said, like the community and dock starting is so cool. Here, it's also winging because you're so close to the spot, the lake is pretty small, so you go out, you come back in, and everyone's just there with their camper and just like is having a good time. And he is so energetic, like, can I try this?
Always.
Let's do this. Come on, have you tried this? And we're just going all the time. That's so fun. And he can do anything, like really. But funny enough, also he needed some time with the Paia.
Yeah.
He, of course, took his small board and his small foil. He managed to do it, but he still struggled a little bit. I was surprised.
I think double skin are amazing once they are up and riding, but they are not good in getting you on foil.
Yeah, yes. I just talked to Greg and Gwen as well, and they said, yeah, you just need more leg work, and it should be more like a pull-up, like going up, rather than like putting it back and then having push or pull downwind. But anyway, man, let's get into your videos, because you said before about script, about shots. who's filming you? How, if you get this new wing that you have now, have you already in your head like what you're gonna do, or are you gonna just test it and then make it happen like organically?
First of all, it's a one-man show, and it's funny because I talked to James Cassie, and he said, hey, he was like looking for someone to help him, and I'm always trying to move to Australia, so I just dropped him a note. I was like, hey, if you can hire someone from Germany, I'm more than happy to work for you, do whatever you want if I can move to Australia. It's pretty hard these days getting a visa. And he said, no, man, I need someone else with like more other stuff. And this is a one-man show. And it's the same for me. I'm doing all the filming, and this is where I'm limited the most. I'm setting up the phone. I tried so many things. Drones, are, unfortunately, they are not allowed here on the river. So it's illegal to fly a drone. The new ones, they just follow you, which is perfect. But it's not allowed. Then I had so many gimbal systems with tracking, and I tried to set them up to have me follow them, my wing foiling, which they do for like a minute, and then they lose you, and then they just film the sky or do something else. So it's very hard, and I'm trying to get away with wide angle lenses like the Insta360 or a GoPro or something like that. But it's super hard, and therefore most of the time I do have a certain amount of shots on my mind that I would do, but sometimes I just go out and you're just hitting gold, doing something crazy or something, just by accident. So you never really know. There's things like the comic kind of style funny parts I'm doing, which are fully scripted, so I'm actually sitting down, I'm writing a script, and most of the time I'm the only one laughing at the final result, and I'm already laughing writing the script. I have this little there's a few reels on my Instagram and YouTube channel where I actually talk to my alter ego, which is represented by like having little dots here for eyes, and I'm just talking to them. And there's one I actually ordered the same prone foil board I had. I ordered the same one with, I think, 3 liters less. And then because it was on sale, I just ordered the same one I already had, just as a spare. So I was getting two boards, and they're like so super similar to the one I already have, which is still in perfect shape. And so I asked myself, like, wow, do I really need three boards, which are almost identical, and two of them are identical? And then I made this little reel, my alter ego talking to me, like talking how stupid it is to get the same board. And I was writing the script and I was laughing so much. I was like, I stopped so many times. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be so good. And still, it's not a very, like, not a lot of people watched it, and it's just got a few likes. But every time I watch this, I'm still cranking myself. So I'm my biggest fan.
You know, the thing with the hand, I remember South Park had this episode with Jennifer Lopez. Amazing. So for me, that was really funny.
I've got another script which is coming very soon. I've got all the things set up for another one. I think that's going to be an amazing one, at least for me, for the biggest fan.
You know, that's so important. I mean, that's a thing, right? We're doing these things. We're not really getting any money. I mean, this show, this podcast, two people support a podcast with, I think, $2 or $3 a month. Thank you, Patrick. He's one of the supporters. And there's this other guy. I forgot his name. But he was like the first one. He's like, as soon as we had a couple of episodes out, he said, how can I support the show? How can I pay? So we made his Patreon. There are two people supporting. If any of you listeners still listen at the almost hour mark and you think like, all right, I like this show, think about supporting. It really helps out, because the website hosting, the Riverside, that costs money. Everything costs money. Time, of course, would be worth something as well. So if you can spare like a coffee or something, that would be super helpful. Or even a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify stars. I've one review.
Yeah, and it makes a difference. And it's, I don't want to back people for stuff like that, but just watching the video, and then it's like every YouTuber, the famous ones, they always ask like, could you please ring the bell or something. I'm trying not to ask people, but it does make a difference, because that's how we are getting more views and more money. And in my perfect world, I'm having like, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 followers if I count them all together. If everyone could just spend €1 a month, which is not much, That would be more than enough to feed my family and be hopline 24/7 and just make amazing content. So it's not going to happen, but
Now,
wishful thinking.
is there any way people can support you financially? Do you have like buy me a coffee set up or something?
I think I have. I think it's set up, but never ever someone bought me a coffee. I think it's on
All right.
Instagram where I think there's a button and you can, maybe it's not working. I'm not really sure. So yeah, it's kind of hard. What I like the most is people getting back to me and just giving me some feedback. And it doesn't have to be positive. So many times, even a comment, a bashing comment was sometimes good. Like I made a really long review and it's always honest and unbiased reviews, as unbiased as I can be, about the Slingshot One Lock. And I said it's a very bold move for them to leave everything behind and just go one lock all in. And I talked about everything but not about corrosion. And one of the first comments, and that's like a really big issue for everyone except for me, because I don't surf much salt water. And then the first comment was, yeah, video is okay, but how can you not talk about corrosion? And I was like, oh, thank you very much for bringing this up. And I think I pinned this comment and I put it very up, so I was very thankful, and now it's there. So that's a good, and I probably appreciate a good comment more than a euro or a coffee, I guess. Might
All
have to
right.
change.
If we manage and find that link, you don't have to support the show or me, support Nico on the Buy Me a Coffee link in description if we
Let's see
manage
if
to
it
find
works.
it. Listen, just one of the last questions, or actually statements. It's not really a question, because what I really liked, I remember you had this shot, I think it was dock starting in the rain.
Oh,
That
yeah, that
was
was
an
amazing.
amazing shot. That must have been spontaneous. With the
It
sunlight
was,
and
it was,
everything.
it was. And there's actually, it's, it, there's a little lightning. There's a guy standing next to me. He's doing the filming, and it was one of the gold, which is for me, just having a session with friends. And sometimes I'm filming, sometimes I'm not. Depends on whether I need some footage for something. And I wanted to make a video with a barracuda because it was just not represented enough. And I know I have to send it back soon. So I took that one, and then the magic just happened. It was like sun going down, golden hour, and it was a thunderstorm approaching. And we just looked at each other and it's like, should we leave or should we stay? And everyone was like, hey, it's a warm summer night. As long as we're not getting hit by lightning, we're just gonna stay. So I set up the GoPro and I had an Insta360, and the footage is just amazing. It's mind-blowing, to be honest. It's on Instagram, you can't really tell because it's such a low quality. If you had a decent camera, not a phone and a GoPro at that moment, that could have been shot of my lifetime. It was just, and water surface in rain, it just evens out all the little reflections and it's just magic.
It was really beautiful. If I can, I'm just gonna add a little bit of that video to the video
Oh yeah,
podcast
sure.
so people can see, and then come over to Hopline on Instagram. I was just curious, because you said that you might have to give back your barracudas. Are you gonna come on the 14th of September to the 1001 waves happening? Have you heard about that?
Not yet, no.
Because like a paddle up, there are clinics, there's wave thieving, grill and drinks and whatnot. So I'm gonna send you
Sounds
the
good.
link. So for
Go.
everyone listening, it's already happened and it probably was amazing.
Yeah. Oh, there's
I just
so many great things to go. It's like time is the most valuable thing. Like if I had more time, and especially in your situation, in my situation, we do need to make a living and we do have kids. So many times if I watch like Rob Peary or something on YouTube, one of the questions, and I might call him one day and just ask him, it's like, how does he do it? How does he spend so much time in the water? Is he not working? What's the rest of the family life? And I remember myself when I was young and I was studying, I was not in a relationship and I was just constantly studying and surfing at the same time. And a lot of people are doing that, but some people are just, I think they don't have to work anymore. They are in a very fortunate position and they just foil. So yeah,
You
it's
know what? Honestly,
timeless.
I'm not sure if that's the case, because people think I'm constantly on the water as well, and I still work as a
Yeah.
teacher full time. So
Which is crazy
it looks
because
like
you
that. It looks like that.
Yeah, but you're still putting out a lot of content, a lot of high quality content, and even the same with you. I still think like, wow, you do have a job and you still manage to go out and do these long sessions and spend a lot of time and effort to make such a in-depth comparison of Powerwings. So kudos to you. It's super hard, and I know how hard it is to be split in between the job, the family, and your passion.
Well, thanks a lot, man. I just want to finish it up because we're above the hour mark. You said that you use the Insta360, you use your phone. Do you have like a good waterproof pouch for your phone? What other gear do you use? I see you have your headphones on. What other good gear do you use? You have a good tripod?
Yeah, I've got lots of gear. That will actually we'll need another hour to go through this. And these ones, they're funny because I made them when I was 12 years old. So they're like
I'm cool.
super old, and that was way beyond or before the headphone trend. Everyone was going for these little in-ear plugs, and I was like, wow, what's the opposite? Well, and as an industrial designer, if you can't hide it, you have to highlight it. So if whatever it is, if you have a car and you have a camera sticking out somewhere, and you have to put a highlight on it if you can't hide it. And I thought the same with the headphones. I was like, wow, what if I put some green velvet clothes on it? And I was just wearing like this. And then 25 years later, headphones and fashion became a trend. So that's very funny. But I use a lot of gear, and it's small things like a light like this. It makes a difference, but I wish I could have more professional gear, especially for the camera. I'm recording most of it with my phone, to be honest, which is staying outside of the water, so I'm not using any waterproof cases. And other than that, I do have like a GoPro and an Insta360. Taking Cassie Neistat once said, the best camera you can get is the one available, and that's pretty much the case right here.
All right, it makes a lot of sense. All right, man, I think we're gonna wrap it up here. Is there anything else, Nico, that you have planned ahead that you can share with the viewers or listeners?
Not actually. Like, there's so much more we could talk about because we were on a very similar page. And I just want to catch up with one thing you said, and I think that's very important because it reflects to my situation right here. You said earlier in this podcast, foil drive might be, it's a great tool, but it might be putting people in situations where they don't belong. And I think that's very interesting, and that could be a whole podcast by itself, probably. But like you said, I think it's a very great tool, but because your learning curve is so steep, just like you said, it might take you out into the ocean, into big waves, in situations that might be a little bit overwhelming. And right here on the river in Germany, I'm not sure if people around the world followed the discussion, but we're getting a ban on taking a swim in the rivers. So it started off probably 4 weeks ago, and some people grounded in the one of the major river, the River Rhine in Düsseldorf, and the government jumped in and said, we're going to have a ban on swimming in the river. And then it's just one town, and then the next town, and the next within a couple of days, going down the stream, town by town, followed, issuing laws not allowing to go into the river anymore. And it's just a couple of weeks before it's here. And it's the same with foiling. If you're not doing it in a respectful and responsible way, it might be banned. And I think foil drive is banned in Switzerland. It's not allowed. It might be one day, but it's not at the moment. And I think there's some people trying to change this. But it might be become an issue here as well if people are going out of their limits or beyond their limits and getting themselves into dangerous situations. So I can only ask everyone out in Germany and probably every other country to not get yourself in trouble, because that's not only bad for you, or it might be bad for you, but it's might be bad for the sport and everyone else involved.
All right, that's a very wise word that you put out. In Switzerland, we have the code of conduct. Patrick Federi, with a group of other foilers, brought that to our attention and has it on his website. I'm going to link it in the description so people can maybe adapt it and use it for themselves as well. Yeah. Episode, I don't remember, somewhere up here as well. Thank you very much, Nico, for coming on the show. It was super interesting, super cool to talk with you. And I hope that we see each other again. If I can manage to get to the Bolt, that might be something. Or if it's still allowed, I might come to your place with the foil drive that I still have. And we have a little joint session. That would be awesome.
Like you did, you had a session with Dom, I think, in the Netherlands.
Yes, it was amazing.
Did you make it really cool? You made a podcast, huh? I think I listened to that one.
Yes.
Was it? Yeah.
One like almost a year ago now. It was one of the first, episode 8 or 9, something like that, about general what foil drive is, because I didn't know. I thought of having a motor. I don't want to have a motor.
That's the last thing you want.
And now I thought, all right, it makes a little sense. Then we had the session together in the Netherlands. And the first one was amazing because it was on the Markermeer. And the wind bumps were so easy. They were quite steep, but still slow. It was so easy. And then the a couple of days after, went to the North Sea, and it was all messy, super difficult. So I had two different sessions, some videos on the YouTubes as well. But then we had another podcast just talking about that first session that we had. I'm going to go to Italy in the fall vacation, autumn vacation. Oh. I'm going
to
bring...
Are you going to Andrea, to Bari?
No, I'm going to be the other side, like on the heel of the boot. But I'm actually going to get a slim to test because I want to feel the difference.
Oh, that's amazing.
I have this rather small board. I don't know if you've seen it. I done a video about downwind on a palm foil.
I haven't.
I just started in the harbor and went out in the little wind bumps. We're not super big. But it was super fun with the small board
so much fun.
And I thought I should use that with a full drive, but then it is super heavy. So with the slim, it might be different. So Dom's going to say, we want to test it and maybe make a video about that as well.
That's my daily driver, having I think it's a 10 or 8 liter pump board, a slim, and just a short mast, small foil, light gear. That's amazing.
All right, so cool. So I'm looking forward to that.
I just had one guy getting back to me, and that's probably a good one. He's been foil driving for a year now, and I've been on a foil drive for a very long time now. It's not constantly. I'm not e-foiling. Respect to everyone who likes e-foiling. It's not my passion. I'm more the foiling guy. But it's a great tool. And he asked me a year back, do I need a foil drive? And I was like, well, you don't need it, but it's a great tool. And if you use it in terms of a tool, it might get you into some tanker waves and your wave game is just skyrocket. And he just came back the other day, picked up a stabilizer from it. And he just said, you know what? Everything you said back 1 year back, I didn't believe you. I was like, he's just making something better than it actually is. And he said, but it's exactly like you said, every little chip, everything was just true. And he's just having a good time, and it's a very good tool.
Right. Hey man, super cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
See you soon. Hope to see you on the water, man. That would be really cool.
We will. We should have a shared session. Once you've got that slim, we will have a slim session with mine and yours.
All right, good. I'm gonna put the thick wax to done. All right, man. Have a good day. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks a lot. See you next time.
Bye bye.
Cheers.